Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Charlie Armstrong, the recently retired Chief Information Officer from the Customs and Border Protection Directorate within DHS. Charlie, this is the third trip for you on my show and potentially the last one, unfortunately, because you made some news recently because you retired from government. So congratulations on that.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and your listeners.
Well, I always love the exit interview in many ways because it gives you a little bit more time to think more broadly, talk more generally about your experience in government. And you had 32 years in government, including the last seven at the Customs and Border Protection Directorate. But before we go there, what made you decide to retire now versus, you know, 6 months from now versus 6 months ago? What was the final decision?
I don't think there was like some epiphany that happened. It just 32 years, and I felt like I had a good team in place to be able to take over and take the reins. And, you know, it's time for me to spend a little bit more time focused on myself, my family. You know, I have two kids that are grown now, and they live in different parts of the country, and they'd actually like to start seeing me more. So believe it or not, independently, they both said, how much longer are you going to be doing this? Because we'd really like to spend more time with you.
A lot of times people say when they retire, I'm going to spend more time with my family. You know, that's the age-old cliche, but it sounds for you almost true here, because I know when you're a CIO for a federal agency, people don't understand that the 6.5 days a week, the 10 to 12 to 14 hours a day, it does take its toll. And as I said, you were the CIO at CBP for 7 years. That's a long time.
So, and it was a good run. And actually, between the U.S. Customs Service, the beginning of CBP, DHS, and then back to CBP, a total of 28 years, either with the agency or with the department. So I'm very proud of that. And, you know, it wears on you after a while. You take these kind of jobs, even some of the entry-level positions, they're not 40-hour-a-week jobs because, you know, things go bump in the middle of the night and you have to be able to respond and be available whenever things happen. So, you know, I think that's something that we all sign up for when you enter the IT world, and you try to do your best you can to manage that. But some people do better than others, and some people end up as CIO and don't spend as much time with their kids as they want to.
Well, I know when we've talked in the past, you obviously had a lot of excitement and a lot of passion for your job. So I guess the next question is, now that you're retired, and I know it's still early because it's only been about a couple of weeks, but what does come next for you? Are you taking 6 months off? Are you taking a year off and then you'll reassess, or do you have something in the works?
Well, so the biggest thing is I'm going to go visit my kids. My son is completing his Air Force pilot training this week, and I'm flying down to Columbus, Mississippi for his wing ceremony, a very exciting time. He's going to go on to do a little bit more training, and then he'll be flying C-17s. And then early next month, I'm going to take a week and go out to San Francisco and visit with my daughter. I've been to San Francisco many times, but never had an opportunity to play tourist. It was usually a work trip and no time to go sightseeing or do the kinds of things that tourists do. So we're going to spend the week kind of touring around, you know, that area. She's applied to law school, and so we're going to do some review of what law school she's looking at, and hopefully she'll start law school in the fall.
And then from there, do you know what comes next? I mean, do you have plans to continue to work, or is this it for you? You say, you know, I've worked for 30-plus years, I'm retired.
No, I definitely plan on doing some more work. I haven't figured out what that is yet. People have been very kind. I've gotten a lot of emails congratulating me, a lot of people wanting to talk to me. And I think the big thing for me is trying to wade through what the ethics rules are now and what I can do and what I can't do. So just trying to have those kind of conversations over the next couple months, and then we'll figure it out from there.
I know it's, again, you're just getting through the initial, but do you foresee staying in the federal community in some way or another?
I really haven't figured that out yet. You know, I have nothing against the federal community, but, you know, if an opportunity pops up in the private sector outside of the federal community that people think that I might actually have some skills that could help them, I'd be interested in that too.
All right, well, something I'm sure we will catch up with you on when time has come and you're ready to decide what to do next. 32 years in government, last 7 in CBP, as you said, the last 28 working in the customs. When you look back over your career, what are some of the things that really stand out to you that you're most proud of?
Definitely most proud of being part of the stand-up of the department itself. You know, so being part of a component that came out of the Treasury Department and being a key member of those initial meetings to figure out how to bring stuff together, you know, simple things like how do you tie a bunch of different email systems together and make them work, or how do you tie networks together so that you can all communicate, kind of basic stuff for most people, but, you know, for the 250,000+ people in the department, it was really key to kind of figure that out early on and get that moving. And while I didn't do all the work, it was really nice to be part of it and part of the decision making. So I feel very privileged about that. You know, and then just over my career, you know, it's been an amazing transformation. When I started in IT back in the early 80s, there was no, you know, public internet, right? So with my first job with the Navy, the team actually wrote their own store and forward network to be able to network computers together and distribute workload out among those. You know, and today, you know, that's kind of done behind the scenes and you don't even think about it. So just seeing the architecture shift over the years and things get, in some cases, easier to do, but in other cases, more complex, because as things get simpler, they also open up opportunities to pull more data together from different entities and then deliver some kind of result. And, you know, whether that's through a service across the internet or through some type of cloud computing, it's all been a very interesting dynamic to watch that change over the years, and things that we would talk about 5-10 years ago actually come into fruition and starting to be.
And I know I definitely want to talk about some of the impact that technology has over the years. When you talk about standing up the department, though, that was not an easy thing. There's still a lot of growing pains that are happening today. Here we are, what, 15 or so years later. Give me a sense of what that was like initially. Was it, people described it as, you know, in some ways the wild, wild west, you know, back in 2003, 2004. What really sticks out to you from that time, and how does it compare to now?
It was kind of organized chaos, and I thought Steve Cooper did a great job of herding us as cats along the way and getting us moving, you know, at least, as I said, in some of these basic directions. You know, it's not the level of optimization that we're at today, but it was kind of just basic blocking and tackling. And so I think that while it was chaotic and, you know, from the outside looking in, people were very critical of what we were doing and how we were doing it. You know, the fact that we got things stood up when we did, in my opinion, nothing short of amazing. And then spending the follow-on years kind of fixing things, optimizing things, you know, getting into newer areas. And I think that things have vastly improved in the past, what are we now, 13 years into the department. I think it's nothing short of amazing.
When you look back at some of the projects or programs you worked on outside of this, the big DHS consolidation or creation, was there anything from CBP or any other of your jobs that stand out to you as something that you say, wow, I'm glad I was a part of that too, a specific program or project?
There's been so many. Obviously, my baby has been the ACE program, which is the modernization of the trade process for U.S. Customs and now CBP, and I'm very proud of the fact that, you know, the system is by and large delivered and that trade is transitioning over now to use the system. There's actually been a number of really good documented savings that have come out of it, not just for government, but for industry. Everything from automation of a lot of paper processes to the issuing of electronic bonding, which now is kind of done in hours as opposed to weeks. And so that's really taken a big time savings out of things. Just thinking the other day, we had Valentine's Day, And with one of the mobile applications that was delivered, we took an entire day out of the importation process of fresh-cut flowers. And you can imagine what that does for the industry to think that your flowers are now getting to market a day earlier, and then they have a day more of life, you know, in terms of how long they last. So very proud of that. While nobody remembers it now, it played a key role in the year 2000, and that whole planning process and getting everything from software up to date to a lot of the products and hardware that we use to make sure that come January 1st, 2000, everything continued to work just fine, and that trade and people continued into the U.S. And then very proud of the work that my team has done on the targeting, the ability to give advanced analytics on people and things coming into the U.S. so that they can determine early on what the risk is. So those are all things that I'm very proud of. I have to admit, very little of the work came out of me. Most of it came out of the team. And but I was just proud to be part of it.
All right. Sounds like there's a lot there. So I'd like to maybe pull the string a little bit on ACE, but let's first take a quick break. When we come back, maybe we can talk a little bit more about ACE. My special guest today is Charlie Armstrong, the recently retired Chief Information Officer of the Customs and Border Protection Directorate within DHS. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Charlie Armstrong. He's the former Chief Information Officer at the Customs and Border Protection Directorate within DHS. Charlie just recently retired, and he's kind enough to take a few minutes to talk with us for the show this week. Now, Charlie, before break, we were talking about some things you're proud of in terms of accomplishments. One of them was the ACE program, and I know this has been one of those programs that's been ongoing for feels like 15 years or more, probably longer, probably feels longer for you as well. But just the fact, the example you talked about getting flowers through the import process more quickly because of mobile devices, tell us where ACE is going. Tell us what makes you so proud about that program. And because a lot of times people don't see the benefits because they're kind of happening behind the scenes. So give us a little bit more details about the ACE program and why it's so successful.
Sure, Jason. So, you know, we're talking about the importation of trillions of dollars worth of goods a year. And this is a key part of our U.S. economy. And at CBP, it's a very key part of our mission goals. It's not just the, you know, to identify and stop bad things coming in. It's also the issue of making sure that legitimate trade gets done timely and that we keep the economy flowing. So it's kind of this balance of things. And I'm very proud of the way the team has delivered on the ACE program overall. And more than that, this idea of the single window, which really, you know, allows industry, the trading partners, customs brokers, freight forwarders, steamship lines, airlines, consolidators, everybody, to file with CBP and then have that data either available for other federal agencies that have a vested movement interest in the movement of cargo, or even pass it on to them for their use in their systems. And have that happen almost as a single supply chain of information, right? Instead of, well, we have to file data with FDA, we have to file data with USDA, we have to file data with CBP all separately and worry about the timing and release of things. So for the first time, you know, we're actually getting that process in place. And, you know, the system is pretty much in place now that the transition for industry and government is happening now and will happen over the next few months. I don't want to get into the details of all that because that really is CBP business and I'm no longer the CIO there. But essentially, you know, we're right at the point of transitioning over. And so far, everything looks very good. I know when I left, which was, what, a couple weeks ago, we were at about 24% of cargo being released in ACE instead of the old system. So we can see people are starting to transition over. And the goal would be to get that up pretty close to 100% in the next 4 or 5 months. So that'll be a big thing, like I said, not just for government, but also for industry as well. And, you know, I think if you were to talk to some of the major importers, they would tell you that downstream they see efficiencies and cost savings that will come out of it.
And I think one of the things that we can't get lost in this discussion is this is not just CBP pushing out data, but it's actually a collaboration among agencies. You mentioned FDA, you mentioned USDA, CBP, obviously. I'm sure there's others. And I think maybe, you know, 5, 10, 20 years ago, it would have been, okay, I'll pass you my paper when you get done with your paper, and then we'll have papers that are stapled together, or even systems that were so disparate they couldn't share data. But I think that the win here is as much the faster importation of products and such, but also the sharing of data among agencies and the trust. I mean, do you see that as one of the big wins that maybe people don't recognize?
Yes, absolutely. As you asked me earlier, you know, what have you seen over your career? When I started with U.S. Customs in 1988, we were still automating paper forms, right? Taking paper forms and making them a data stream. And now here we are today looking at the whole process as different data streams all flowing in, all flowing to different agencies for whatever they need it for, and allowing that to happen without a bunch of separate form filings to happen there. So it is a pretty amazing transformation.
Unfortunately, so many times things get lost in the shuffle, that type of transformation. It's always so focused on, as you said, some criticisms or some what were you not doing that you should have been doing, or what IG report or GAO report showed deficiencies in project planning or whatever. But the fact is that this is happening. Obviously, it's a big win for CBP and the government more generally. So we talked about kind of what you're proud of. Okay, so what do you wish you would have spent more time on working on before retiring? What program or project do you wish got maybe further along than maybe you had time for or had, you know, the necessary resources for?
Obviously, the transition to the bigger cloud community is on the horizon for CBP. And while I won't be part of that, it really was kind of on my to-do list, and I'll miss not getting that done. But I really feel that the team in place is very, very bright, and I think they'll far outweigh whatever I would have been able to do in terms of getting there quicker and delivering on the promise of cloud. And I'm not just talking about reducing the cost of delivery, but for us it would have been, you know, allowing us to have a lot more redundancy in the systems and increase the availability so we could spread, you know, data out over different either providers or even within the same cloud, have a lot more resiliency in that kind of service. So I think that's probably one thing. I'm very proud of the fact that we got some really good cyber folks on board before I left. And I think that they'll be working very hard on trying to make sure that all of our systems are resilient from cyber attack and that we're able to implement all the requirements around CDM and become what I would call kind of, you know, best in class around the community. And making sure that we're monitoring things and staying ahead of the curve. So I would have liked to have been part of all that, but, you know, you can't do everything, at least I feel like I've laid a foundation for it.
Do you get a sense of why cloud is hard for whether it's CBP or, you know, let's just talk generally government in general? It seems the business case is obvious. It seems that, oh, well, the private sector is moving to the cloud or seems to be moving to the cloud. But do you get a sense of why the cloud is difficult for CBP or just government more generally?
You know, I think the move to cloud is difficult in general for not just government, but a lot of folks. You know, I talk to folks in the financial sector, you know, some of the big banks, and you know, they're struggling with the transition too. So it's not as easy as everybody thinks it is. You know, if you've only got a small application and, you know, it's a greenfield for you, then, yeah, it's probably a pretty easy transition. But that with the amount of adversity to risk in government, right, and I mean that all the way around. I mean that from the standpoint of risk around how you do the contracting. I mean risk around cybersecurity, a risk around availability and making sure that, you know, data doesn't get lost. Those are all pretty big deals, right? And so, you know, we've struggled, I think, as a community to figure out how do we do these things and still remain compliant with all the regulations and policies that we need to. I think it took some time to get that nailed down, and I still think it's going to take a little more time to get all that nailed down. But you're starting to see people doing it, right? I mean, there are people out here in the community that are moving to cloud, and it's having some positive payoffs for them. And, you know, there's a lot of unknowns here. How do you manage it, right? We're not all experts in managing a utility kind of model like this, and it takes a little time to learn that. So I don't think that it's, you know, this mountain that we won't get over, but I just think that a lot of times everybody says it's just, it's so easy, but when you start to peel back the covers, you find out, well, it's not as easy as you might think it is.
And I think that's a fair point. It takes time to learn. I mean, you probably remember when the move to client server was happening, that didn't happen overnight either. I mean, people were on mainframes probably a long time, and you have some agencies who probably still are on mainframes today.
CBP being one of them.
And probably there's questions that came to you as CIO, said, well, why don't you get off that mainframe? And you probably said, I'd love to, but here's four or five reasons why that we have to consider before we can just turn it off, so to speak, right?
Right, and a large part of it is, you know, for us was transitioning systems to be what we call cloud ready, right? I mean, the way we built systems 20, 30 years ago doesn't exactly fit into the new cloud model. So there's a lot of re-architecting, rewriting of things in order to get ready to go to the cloud that you have to do before you can really take advantage of it. And so that's a lot of the programs that we've been working on, whether it's ACE or modernization of techs or some of these new business analytics capabilities that have been put out. All that centers around moving to a new architecture that really does allow you to take advantage of cloud. And you have to do that before you can really just move out on it.
I think that's a fair point, and one that maybe is not touched upon enough in the federal community. Charlie, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can start looking at some of the technologies that have impacted the government during your career. My guest is Charlie Armstrong, the recently retired CIO of the Customs and Border Protection Directorate within DHS. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Charlie Armstrong, the recently retired CIO at the Customs and Border Protection Directorate within DHS. Now, Charlie, before break, we're talking about some of your accomplishments and some of the things you wish maybe you had spent more time on. When you look back over your 32-plus year career within the federal government, ton of changes. So much change happened from when you first got into where we're at now. What areas do you think has seen the most change in during your career? What really stands out to you from a technology standpoint?
The way things are networked together really made a big difference. Being tied to either a single processor or single machine within, you know, a physical location when I first started to now being able to kind of not even worry about where things are, but address things across the network and get to them anywhere, right? And then this whole notion that, you know, now everything's a utility or service across the enterprise, as opposed to you have to build everything all the time. So a lot of transition there, and it's really sped up the time for us to deliver, right? So it's to shorten the cycle time considerably and allows us to share a lot more information than we would have otherwise. And I think that's a really key piece for me. You know, you've seen networks go from, you know, very kind of monolithic things to even MPLS and now beyond MPLS to these software-defined networks. I think that ability to kind of glue everything together has made life so much more easier. And then beyond that, I would say the development methodologies, certainly with these agile type approaches to how things are put together, have made things come together in a lot more rapid fashion because you're building smaller pieces, but you're delivering them quicker. And so it really cuts down a lot on your risk. It helps your customer kind of understand what some of the bounds are in terms of how much money you're going to spend and what you're going to deliver within that shortened window. It really gets them invested in that. And I think it helps kind of the stakeholders understand where you are at any given time in a program. So I think that's been really critical in the recent years in terms of helping delivery across the board.
You know, you bring up Agile, and there's a lot of discussion around Agile recently in the federal community. And what strikes me about that is back in the early 2000s, maybe late 90s, there was modular contracting, was a buzzword. And there was also very similar to cloud back, now was what was, I think, ASPs, alternative service providers, which was basically clouds. Do you get the feeling that the more things change, the more they stay the same, but we just have better technology now, and that's the differentiator? Like, people understand Agile better now than they did in, 2000 when they were talking modular?
Yeah, well, I think the concepts have matured, but as you said, the technology's changed, right? I mean, 15, 20 years ago, we didn't have the ability to do as much developing of services to be used across enterprises as we do today, which means that as you're building stuff, maybe you don't have to build as many things, right? You can reuse those over and over. And then just allowing for a different way of thinking things, in 2000, everybody wanted that kind of big bang delivery, right? They wanted to know what's the total cost of the program, what are you going to deliver down to the nth degree in that program, and software development, unlike building an aircraft carrier, it's not as well defined, 10 years in advance. You have to be able to adapt to what the need of the mission is at that point in time, right? So, yeah, you build out some what I call high-level understanding of what the requirements are and about what they should cost, but you're not going to get down to that nth degree in the planning stages until you're actually ready to go, put the features and functions together and then sit down with the customer and have the discussion about what do they want, what do they really need, as opposed to building, sports car version that maybe only a tenth of the code gets used. I think that's been the key part of it.
And the other piece of it is, I think, people talked about modular contracting, but the approach of waterfall, if you will, was always such a big part of the culture that that's maybe one of the reasons why it didn't catch on. And now Agile, you're seeing that in the private sector, you're seeing success in government. One of your colleagues, Mark Schwartz, over at Citizenship and Immigration Services, he's the CIO, has had a lot of success there. You guys have also brought in at CBP when you were there a lot of this Agile work. Do you think that success also breeds, desire and others to go, I should look closely at this and then maybe follow in those footsteps?
I do. I mean, I think that others are starting to actually even look at CBP and how they're doing things to figure out, can they benchmark against us and use those kind of practices in their agencies. I'll tell you that we're still learning. I'm still saying we. CBP is still learning Agile. There's still a lot of practices out there that are new and that we're trying to get up to speed on, and especially how Agile relates to cloud and the whole notion of DevOps. So, not just the development of the code, but then how do you get that into production? How do you then do the O&M on it? How do you then monitor these systems and do that in kind of these newer approaches that you're seeing in the commercial area?
Do you have a sense of, before you left CBP, how much difference Agile was making? Are you getting capabilities delivered, 20 days faster, 40 days faster? Do you get a sense?
Yeah, I don't have those kind of metrics off the top of my head. I just know that, for ACE, the boss said, you got 3.5 years to finish up the program, and you got X amount of dollars, go figure out how to get it done. And Agile allowed us to do that. And, the other way around was, you know, we would go build these big models around how much software we're going to design and what all the feature and function points are, and then we come up with some big number and then add 20% of risk on top of it, and then we'd still end up going over that number. So I think kind of bounding things and then delivering them in an agile environment really makes everybody a lot more accountable. So I'm a big fan.
And obviously, as you said, you had a specific amount of time, specific amount of money, now go figure it out. And as you mentioned, ACES is on a really pretty good glide path in finding success. Charlie, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can kind of wrap up our conversation and kind of look to the future. And we'll make you king for the day as well, if you're the king of all CIOs. First, we'll take a quick break. My guest is Charlie Armstrong, the former Customs and Border Protection Chief Information Officer, recently retired. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Check your thrift savings plan numbers every day at federalnewsradio.com. Find out how your funds closed and how they're doing for the year. It's all
and best practices gets you certified as a government market master professional. Get certified. Check it out at federaldirect.net.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My special guest today is Charlie Armstrong, the recently retired CIO from the Customs and Border Protection Directorate within DHS. Now, Charlie, before break, we're talking a little bit about the challenges of Agile and cloud. Let's step back for a second, and I'd love to get your take on the current state of federal IT. And then, obviously, I'd love to talk to you also about the Federal IT Acquisition Reform Act, FITARA, and the expected impact it's going to have on government. So start off with what's your take on the current state of federal IT? Is it better? Is it worse? Where do you see it standing?
Well, I'll just say over my career, I think it's much better than, you know, it was in the early years, because in the early years you saw a lot of redundant spending and duplicate systems and things like that. You're seeing much less of that today. You're seeing a lot more sharing of infrastructure. You're seeing where departments and agencies are working together to get economies of scale. You know, I think a good example is this government-wide cell phone contract now that GSA has, that we can all go order services and get the benefit of, you know, the minutes off of that kind of economy of scale. I think there's a lot of big wins in there that probably the story doesn't get told on them every day.
Do you get a sense that when people talk about, well, federal IT is so bad, I always find that people get frustrated with certain aspects, but generally speaking, I remember telling someone from the Obama administration at a very high level, very early on in the administration, that they had to stop talking about how bad federal IT is, because it's one, insulting to the current people who are doing it, but two, the desktop that person had was really no different than the desktop they had in the private sector versus the public sector. Do you find that, again, generally speaking, IT and government is about equal or maybe even a little better than most private sector firms, but it just gets a bad rap for a few bad apples?
I do. I can say this now, but I do think it gets a bad rap. And yeah, I mean, sometimes it lags behind in being able to take advantage of the latest techniques and buying practices. But a lot of that's gated by, you know, the way the policies get put in place and kind of the challenge around the flexibility in those policies to allow you to take advantage of newer and better ways of doing things. And that's everything from the way we contract for things to how we hire IT professionals. Everything across the board makes it very difficult to kind of stay ahead of the curve there. So I don't think we're doing that bad of a job. So obviously some agencies and departments are doing better than others, but I think the real test is when you go to the mission folks, what do they say about their IT shop? If they tell you that they don't get what they need, then that's a good indicator for me that they probably need to update their practices and do a better job of things. And that was always the barometer for me. It was not listening so much to what's the federal community saying about me. It's what does that frontline officer or agent say to me? what does the leadership of the agency say to me? You know, what are those key stakeholders from the public sector that have to use the system say? Those are the real barometers for me in terms of how well federal IT is doing.
You're getting a little ahead of yourself because I was going to ask, what advice do you have for the next CIO coming up or another CIO in government? And that sounds like that's the beginning of one. Understand who your audience is and make sure that they like what you do. But before we go there, FITAR is another big hot topic. It's supposed to change so much around IT and acquisition and give CIOs more authorities. Do you get a sense that FITAR is moving the government in the right direction?
Yeah, it's like everything else, the devil's in the details, right? You know, I think it's gonna depend on how that all gets implemented. I know in the past there's been this kind of push-pull relationship between do you consolidate everything and move everything up to economies of scale, or do you allow some of the components to determine how they're going to operate that IT and make things work. And I think that the challenge is going to be striking that balance between having that kind of central authority and control, but in a measured way that allows the mission to get done. So you know, you can't hamstring a component CIO to the point where they just can't get their jobs done anymore, because they're going to be held accountable just like the departmental CIO is going to be held accountable.
And I think what we're seeing with FITAR is, at least from OMB's perspective, they're telling the headquarters CIO, manage the commodities, leave the mission technology to the lower level CIOs or component level CIOs. Did you see that starting to happen within DHS, or had it already been happening? I mean, I know your relationship with Luke McCormick, the DHS CIO, was fairly close. You guys worked together on a lot of different programs, and I know you also worked with other component CIOs.
Yeah, we've got a very good community, CIO community within DHS, always working together, you know, always kind of sharing information across lines about how we were doing things, what they were doing, what we were doing, how they were getting there, what challenges they were running into. And I think that Luke and his leadership team there has been really good at kind of calling out and facilitating some of those discussions across the community and making sure that we're kind of sharing as we go along. So that's been a real big plus for the department. And I'm very very proud of Luke and what he's accomplished. We'll see what he can do in the next 10-11 months. I think that he'll do a good job at getting FITAR in place and starting to implement a lot of the tenets. I think some of the tenets were already there. You know, if you look at some of the policies like in MD 102. A lot of those kind of reporting policies are already in place. A lot of the approvals are in place, and just trying to get to some guidelines around things so that people aren't guessing what it is they need to do to be compliant.
And I think that's a key piece, so don't guess. Know exactly what's expected of you. You mentioned accountability earlier on. I think that's key as well.
Well, and not being afraid to have discussion about what's not working, right? A lot of times, you know, even when I was a departmental deputy CIO, you know, we put policies in place and people were afraid to speak up and say, hey, I can't get my job done now, you know, and it's impacting the mission. And so, you know, getting to a point where people can be open and have those kind of dialogues and constructive about, okay, here's what the department needs in order to have accountability and compliance. Here's what the component needs in order to do the mission delivery. How do you work that process so that you get the best of both worlds?
Charlie, I mentioned earlier in the segment about we would make you king for the day and say what would one or two things you, if you could, change about federal IT. Would it be the budget? Would it be what? What if you could have your magic wand and go, you know, 1, 2, 3, change, what would it be?
I have to admit, I left at a point in time when the president was announcing this new cyber role. I think, you know, coming up with a construct that really helps CIOs across the community deal with the cyber threat a lot easier, and allowing them to focus back in on delivery to the mission, I think is key. So, you know, one of the magic wand things I would say is help figure out a way to kind of ease that burden across the components and the departments and make it more standardized across government. I don't know what that is, but maybe this new kind of cyber person across government can bring that together for us. The other thing is I've seen in my last probably 5-7 years a drain on the procurement community. A lot of the good contracting officers have retired or gone out to private industry because of, you know, better jobs. And I think it's time to prime the pump and get some more people into the system so that downstream we'll have the right number and the quality contracting officers that we need in the future. It really does help to have that in place, especially contracting officers that understand how to buy IT and understand some of our challenges and language and those kind of things. I think that would be really helpful.
Very good, Charlie. Now, we're almost out of time. Before I let you go, one last time, we talked a little bit about advice earlier on. You mentioned the relationship with the mission owners. What other advice would you have for other current or future CIOs in government?
I'm really proud of the team that I built, and I really think that while as a CIO or a new CIO, you often get kind of focused in on that go solve some mission problem, you have to step back and take a look at the team that you got, and is it the team that you need for the future? And don't be afraid to make some changes and build that team. And that team should be resilient. It should be able to carry on without you or any other person in the construct. So I think that that's a key thing that a lot of people don't get an opportunity to do because it takes so long to get people on board and get them through the clearance process. So I would say make sure you got enough time, enough ramp room to get that done while you're going to be the CIO and really strike out on what those key positions are and get the right people in them.
All right, Charlie, this is great advice. Build your team. Make sure the team can live on without you, something that hopefully you did very well now that you've retired from the government after 32 years. My guest today was Charlie Armstrong, the recently retired Chief Information Officer of the Customs and Border Protection Directorate at DHS. Charlie, I'd like to thank you for your time today, and of course, thank you for your long service to the government and all the changes and difference you made.
Thank you, Jason, and I just want to take this opportunity to thank all the folks that have been key throughout my tenure in government. I've worked for a lot of great leaders. I've worked with a lot of great people that have all done wonderful things and helped me out along the way, and I can't leave out industry. Industry's been really great to me. They've listened, they've helped, and I'm looking forward to working with them in the future.
All right. On that note, you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.